Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
Matt and I have been talking about privacy and the importance of using a VPN for 7 years now, literally 7 years. I believe at least once every episode or two, it's like, hey, make sure you're running a VPN. I think it's especially important today where you have governments in the UK, other parts of Europe, all across the world, really trying to introduce digital ID and curbing speech with hate speech laws. Make sure you're protecting your privacy and shielding yourself from government surveillance as you're perusing the web. Our VPN of choice here at RHR is Obscura. It is built by a Bitcoiner for Bitcoiners. Carl Dong did some very critical work for Bitcoin back in the day, but he decided to shift his focus to bring privacy to everybody with Obscura. It is a VPN that cannot log, literally by the way it's designed. A lot of VPNs will hand wave, say, we're not logging. You can't trust them. You want the VPN that cannot log. That is Obscura. Go to obscura.net. Use the code RHR for 25% off when you sign up any of their deals. Make sure you're using it, particularly if you're in one of these countries where the governments are becoming extremely censorious and targeting citizens that exhibit wrong think. You should be running a VPN. That VPN should be Obscura. Obscura.net, code RHR, 25% off. This rip was brought to you by our official electrolyte sponsor here at RHR, Salt of the Earth. You've been hearing Matt and I talk about it quite a bit. I drink multiple packets of it a day. You got to stay hydrated. That's why my face looks so good. So I'm getting buff. I'm able to get to the gym more because I'm hydrated. Matt, he's looking incredible. I'm sure you've all noticed it. You want to know why? Salt of the Earth, baby. Go to drinksote.com, use the code RHR, and you're going to get 15% off. I'm dead serious. It's made my life way better. My wife, she's right behind me right now laughing, but she's laughing because she knows it's true. She drinks like seven a day. I drink a few a day, maybe seven a day too. Matt, I don't even want to tell you how much he's drinking. It's good. It keeps you hydrated. It keeps you alert. Keeps you ready to go. Drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code RHR for 15% off any order.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
My camera first before we go live, Logan. Another ninja launch.
I said button, and then you started cleaning your camera.
And then I just that you did that. Pull up the tweet.
Logan completely warned us. That was 100% intentional.
Ah, fuck.
Wow.
Hey, language. Wow. There's children listening to this, Logan. Really messing up.
We can bleep that out. If your children are in the car, listen with an earphone in.
73% chance that Bitcoin will fall below $90,000.
Should I bet on this one? Are you betting on this one?
I mean,
I think these are the funniest markets because, like, literally, you could just buy or sell Bitcoin. You don't need to bet on the price of Bitcoin in Polymarket, but yeah. Marty, the freaks have been waiting. Is it a dump?
I think
did we dump?
I think it's safe to say we're in a dump, down 25%.
That's a dumb.
Is the bear market here? Are you, is Super Cycle still in play?
Maybe it's, it's too early to tell. It's too early to tell, sir. What do you think?
Fuck. I think people should stay humble and stack sets.
Language.
I mean, I've been shitting on the Super Cycle theory for a while.
You have.
But I don't think we're entering like a traditional bear market, like a 3-year bear market or something. We just didn't really have a blow off top. So I don't think anyone really knows where we're going. I think this price action is a mix of macro stuff. The macro environment continues to be fucking horrible. You know, the regular markets today are not doing great. I guess they're not doing horrible now that I'm checking. They weren't doing great earlier. S&P is kind of even, but gold's down a bit for gold, 2.5%, 2.35%. But the macro environment is not great. And then I think there's something we've been covering for a while is like, I think there's a shit ton of fucking overhang on these Bitcoin stocks, MicroStrategy, all the MicroStrategy copycats, the natural like shitcoin stuff. Like there's people, you look at Bitcoin and what? We are down about 25% from all time high. And then you look at like shitcoin land and they're down 80%. And you look at Bitcoin stocks land and they're down, depending on the stock, like 50 to 90%. And then all of a sudden you realize why people are selling Bitcoin is because they're fucking in over their heads. They didn't stay humble. They got absolutely wrecked. They're trying to cover losses. God forbid they're actually leveraged on these things too. And they're in a debt hole on it. And I think it's dragging Bitcoin down with it. Like it's hard to, this is part of the nuance. I mean, that we've talked about in the past is like you have, a lot of the focus on MicroStrategy. Well, first of all, it's strategy and then there's everything else, right? There's a lot of shit out there that is even worse quality than strategy. But a lot of the focus on strategy has always been actually strategy's leverage, right? Like how much leverage is Saylor taking on and will he blow himself up? There's been less focus on his retail customers and the people that are buying his stock and how much leverage they're taking on. I think they were a lot more reckless than he was. And I think he fanned the flames with it a lot. And if you look at the MicroStrategy chart, it looks like fucking absolute destruction. Like that thing just keeps going down, just grinding lower and lower and lower. There were a lot of Bitcoiners that had a shit ton of fucking exposure to it. And it's yet to be seen if his preferred strategy will pay off. I mean, this week was, I think, the first week where he bought decent size without selling common stock. And the stock just kept going down. You know, that's what people have been waiting for.
It's under $200 right now. It peaked over $500 this time last year. So, yeah, it's down way more than 50%. I saw Fartface, OG, RHR freak. I don't know if Fartface still listens these days. If you do, let us know. But he had a long tweet basically expressing regret about, I guess, quote-unquote, diversifying into strategy.
No. He's been anti-strategy. His long tweet was quoting someone else, like one of his buddies who messaged him. But same. And I mean, it also goes like, Metaplanet, like what is Metaplanet down from its peak? Like that's got to be like 90% down. Mike Mann saying he's still 50% up on Nostra. Like congratulations, that's on strategy. Like congratulations, that's great. There's a lot of people that aren't, and they're selling Bitcoin presumably. And then the other piece, which we've talked about in the past, is like I don't think Saylor will be a forced seller. I think he's pretty deliberate about his goal here to just try and accumulate and take on reasonable risk relentlessly. But something we've talked about in the past is like when there's fear in the streets, like people are just going to theorize that he's dumping and that's going to cause like this circular feedback loop. And that's what we saw today. I don't know if you saw like all the engagement accounts were like Saylor selling, blah, blah, blah. And then he posted poorly timed AI slop that looked like he was evacuating the Titanic. before he corrected the record and said, oh, no, we didn't sell anything.
That was a terrible AI generation.
Looking at it now,
I know what he meant to do.
Yeah, it's like, come on, brother.
You meant to mean like the economy was the Titanic and he was the MicroStrategy was the lifeboat, but it did look like he was just abandoning MicroStrategy and by himself.
Look, and pull it up. If we look at the fear and greed index, it's at 16, which is 5 points below where it was last week when we checked it. It was at 21, I believe. So it's fear in the streets. I mean, my personal indicators are going off. I'm with a couple of Bitcoiners who are getting or at least one of them's getting a bit nervous. And I'm like, brother, hold on. It's like, I'm not going to give financial advice, but is using pattern recognition, sentiment.
You're not going to give financial advice
over 12 years. We've been
giving financial advice every week for 7 years.
I also got texts from a buddy this morning, like, hey, how far is this going? I'm looking to scoop up some coin. I was like, I don't know. Like sentiment wise, like people are freaking out. Everybody's convinced we're going to 80K. And as we know, Bitcoin doesn't do what you think it's going to do or what you want it to do at any given point in time over the long time horizon. It certainly proves to be a good store value. But I don't know. Sentiment wise, I'm like, we're getting close to a point where things feel exacerbated. And then you couple that with, I mean, we were just talking about in a personal message, Strike just tweeted out they're having like a record volume day, a bunch of people buying the dip there. And we have it on the list. We'll talk about it. But I think
to be clear, that includes selling the dip. But yes.
Yes, that's true. But
it's a
big announcement.
It's about 60-40 buy sells, I think, right now.
That's, hey, still in favor of buys. Square Cash App, big release week for them. We'll talk about that in depth. I think Abu Dhabi just filed a report. They doubled their allocation to IBIT.
The actual, like, besides the price action, like when I was making the list, like it was a really bullish week.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the fact that like our net worth is just fucking
plummeting.
just absolutely going to fucking hell and back. Besides that, quite bullish week.
Yeah. Should we jump into it? Let's get people bullish. Let's remind people that we're here for a peer-to-peer distributed cash system with a hard cap supply that can be controlled by no individual, no corporation, no government. That has fundamental value that has not gone away despite the price going
down. Dude, before we get bullish, I just, okay. in the spirit of the bearishness, I just want to just put it out there, like, If it takes 4 years to reclaim all-time high, like, fuck that shit. That would fucking suck. Okay, now we can return to the bullish. Let's make people believe
that. It's going
to
take 4 years. But despite that.
That would be the worst timeline ever. That would just fucking suck. I mean, no, it is what it is. Unlike Sailor, I'm going down with the ship, but.
We're in it for the tech, brother. We're in it for the tech, okay? Yeah. Number go up is just a sideshow.
Yeah, well, the tech is my family's life savings, so.
Speaking of the tech, obviously I alluded to it. Square they said they were going to enable their sellers to be able to accept Bitcoin on November 10th, stayed to that deadline, released it to all merchants. Seems like it was a very successful launch for them. A lot of Bitcoiners were activated going around to local Square merchants and helping them turn on the accept Bitcoin feature. And I believe on btcmaps.org, which is an open source map project that'll let you know where all the vendors are that accept Bitcoin are throughout the world. I saw a tweet earlier this week that there was 50 pages of pending sort of PR merges for Square merchants alone. So it seems like there are a lot of merchants out there that are turning this on and looking to reap the benefits of being on the map within Cash App. We'll talk about that. I was actually in New York City on Wednesday this week for the Cash App releases event. Incredibly impressive. They've released a ton of features, not just Bitcoin related. They enabled a AI chatbot called Moneybot. I want to talk about that. Really just making the app more featureful, making it easier for people to pool money together to pay for things. Obviously, Bitcoin becoming a first-class citizen again, making it very easy to pay Bitcoin invoices with your dollar balance on Cash App. That's a massive feature that Strike really innovated on. What else did they release? LNURL. You can send Bitcoin to a Cash App user using their cash tag at cash.app.
Everyone has a Lightning address.
Everyone has a Lightning address. Yeah, and they enabled stable coins as well. So you can send stable coins.
Was that that's not live yet, right?
No, I think they were teasing that it's going to go live in 2026. So, but they were demoing it at the releases event, and it was really cool. I think it was a massive week for Block, the parent company of Square, and Cash App. And I think I alluded to it last week, but I recorded with Miles Suter, who's a good friend of ours and the head of Bitcoin product at Block, and we talked a lot about how that company has sort of reorganized themselves to really begin leaning into shipping more products at a increased clip, and then leaning into.
Yeah, they've been on a tear lately.
Yeah. What do you think about all this? Good week.
Yeah, I mean, massive, huge props to their team. I mean, I had Dorsey on Dispatch late January, early February. I forget the exact date. And we were talking about Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. And of course, the obvious question came up, well, you know, you have 4 million merchants, like when are you going to enable Bitcoin payments? And he said it was like not on the near-term roadmap at all, that we weren't at like the right timing for the adoption cycle. So that just gives you a little context of how quick they shipped this thing. Right. It probably was like 6 months ago, 7 months ago. They're like, okay, we need to make this happen for our 4 million merchants. And then they just fucking made it happen, which is quite fast. Love to see, you know, less hype and more shipping. And it just feels like a big moment. It feels like a big moment. We've had multiple false starts in terms of merchant adoption in the past. So I think it's clever that they packaged it with all these other things. First of all, 0% fees for merchants. Look, merchants are hurting. We've talked about the silent depression going on right now. If a merchant can save 3%, that moves the needle. I think that really moves the needle. Then on the user side, enabling the Strike-like feature of being able to pay from your cash balance. So you don't have to have Bitcoin to be able to pay the merchant in Bitcoin. And then that last piece where the merchant, whether they accept Bitcoin or dollars, basically can choose how much in Bitcoin or dollars they want to keep. I think it kind of just brings it all together and will hopefully make it more sticky. I would say, with all that said, I mean, once again, huge congrats. I mean, I'm sure this is just the beginning and they're going to iterate from here. It's good to get things live. When they were first talking about this, like right before the Bitcoin conference, when they enabled, they were talking about enabling it by default, but if the merchant didn't opt in, it would just automatically convert to dollars. I think that would reduce a lot of friction. Specifically when you have the Square payment terminals that are facing the user, like facing the customer, it should just always show a Lightning QR code there. Like I shouldn't have to ask the merchant, I want to pay with Bitcoin. Because we're going to be like 2 months down the road. The cashier's not going to know what I'm talking about. They're going to like, there's going to be like five people behind me. Like my fucking toddler is going to be screaming. And I'm going to be like, Joe, do you accept Bitcoin? And it's just, it could be cleaned up. Like they can make that a little bit more streamlined, but then the merchant gets it in dollars. Like we're not forcing the merchant to accept Bitcoin. Like that makes sense to me. I think that would go a long way. To make this process a little bit easier. And then the second piece, which I expect them to do, but I don't think they really announced it, is, okay, so it's obvious to the merchant why they would want to enable it. They want to save the 3%. How do we encourage Bitcoiners to spend Bitcoin when many of our peers don't want to spend Bitcoin? I mean, we have at Bitcoin Park in Nashville, we have ride or die Bitcoiners come every month, and every month we have food for sale in Bitcoin, you know, like local vendors in Bitcoin, and the payment percentage is like 20%. And that's like among a specific ride or die that know that they can pay with Bitcoin. And I think Cash App specifically is really uniquely positioned to go heavy in the rewards space, right? Like give the users direct incentive to pay with Bitcoin. Because if a user is able to save 2%, 3%, once again, they're also in a silent depression. They'll probably take them up on that offer and pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah, to everybody saying, why would I spend my Bitcoin? It's like, get on a Bitcoin standard. If you run the numbers, that's another thing they've had it, but if you direct deposit your paycheck into Cash App, you can automatically convert that into Bitcoin, live on a Bitcoin standard. I think really big. And in terms of, you mentioned the conference and the rollout of the, I guess, beta test at the conference. Miles told a really cool story about that on TFTC, like seeing the evolution of this. I think to your point about your conversation with Jack earlier this year, I think they weren't really expecting to roll it out this fast at all and just felt like, hey, let's go do it. But I'm not going to spoil that.
Yeah, it's just big, like, if not us, then who energy? And they just fucking shut the thing. It's awesome.
And if you just put numbers around it too, I think collectively the 4 million Square sellers last year did something like $250 million or $1 billion, excuse me, $250 billion in gross volume of sales through their terminals. And so if you just run the numbers there, you get 10% of that volume converted to Bitcoin. I think that's probably a lofty goal, but let's just throw it out there. If you were to do that, it'd be $25 billion of constant buy pressure if you're converting fiat, 10% of your fiat revenues into Bitcoin. And that is almost half of the ETF flows from last year or from this year as well. So that's like a pretty,
I think in the short term, that's going to be, if you look at like actual volume numbers, I think that feature is going to dwarf people actually paying in Bitcoin. The ability for the merchant to choose how much of their dollars automatically get converted, I think at zero fee, into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of merchants will choose that. And I think it's going to be a long grind to actually get consumer adoption up on people spending Bitcoin. But I will just say, like, I love spending Bitcoin, but also at the same point, like, I've been at conferences where they accept Bitcoin. And if the merchant, if the cashier behind the counter has to do an extra step to accept your Bitcoin, like if it's Apple Pay or Google Pay, it's literally just like, you just tap your fucking phone, but boop. For the cashier, it's super easy. But if they have to do something else to get you to accept Bitcoin, they start resenting it. Like, they really, really resent it. And Square is in this unique position where a lot of their point of sales are already pointed at the user, right? Where you pick your tip amount. They, you know, everyone always gets mad that they like force the tip in front of you. But that screen that's facing you, you know, dedicate the top right corner and just put a lightning invoice over there all the time. So you don't have to say anything to the merchant. You just fucking take out your phone as if you're going to pay with Apple Pay and just scan the invoice.
Or maybe it's just like a button by the tip, like pay in Bitcoin, like hit the tip, pay
in
Bitcoin.
Yeah. But put it in the user's hands.
Yeah. Right?
Instead of them scrolling in the background and clicking Bitcoin.
Yeah. Look at us, product feedback for the Square team here. Think about it. Power users here. Now, the other feature to the Cash App release, and I was able to sort of interact with the demo, MoneyBot. Like, this is from...
Oh, yeah, hit us with this.
From a fintech app sort of feature, like, it was extremely powerful. Like, I'm not sure if you guys watched the demo, but you could interact with it, like, say, hey...
It's like ChatGPT and Cash App, right?
But it's even more, like, it feels more sort of focused than ChatGPT. Because, like, let's say one of the user flows they walk through is like, we go out to dinner, I pick up the bill with my Cash card, and then I go into Cash App and say, hey, I actually split this bill with Matt. Can you send him an invoice for half the bill minus the tip? And we'll automatically do that. Matt in the middle at the end, like, yes, confirm. This is how much I want to request from Matt. And then on top of that, you can say, hey, how's my spending been? Over the last month, I'm going to start saving. Can you help me build a diversified portfolio of Bitcoin and stocks? And I can do stuff like that and say, hey, if you wanted to, or I want to dump all my sort of excess disposable income that I'm not spending in Bitcoin per month. I want to do that automatically. and it can set up that flow for you. And I just think,
so it's like what? It's like a virtual financial planner, basically, SaaS assistant, yeah. Right?
Yeah, which is like from a fintech feature perspective, I think it's cutting edge. And they're leveraging Goose and a bunch of, I think, dedicated models that they built internally for the different features. And obviously, they have a ton of data on all their users on the consumer side and the merchant side. So I'm actually really excited to see how people interact with that as well. But yeah, it's a good day for Bitcoin. Again, like 4 million merchants now have the ability to incorporate Bitcoin into their business strategy very easily.
Pretty cool.
And to your point about timing, isn't giving up too much, but it's like Miles said, it's like today's the best day, tomorrow will be the best day. Let's just get it out there. And
yeah, it's like what people talk about with the AI stuff, right? It's like, this is the worst it'll ever be.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm overwhelmingly positive about this. And I think the team deserves huge credit. I mean, we've been talking about it, right? Like I think Block has quietly become like the shining example of a large, well-executed, vertically integrated Bitcoin business, right? That's cash flow positive, they're profitable, and then they're saving, they're saving in Bitcoin. They're saving a portion of their profits in Bitcoin. And we've also talked about in the past that, a lot of focus has historically been on public companies and their Bitcoin strategy. And that makes sense because public companies are large companies and people can buy and sell the stock and there's a lot of attention on them. But Bitcoin has historically been a massive equalizer and superpower for small businesses. So to see the stack get rolled out to, the local ice cream store, the local taco shack, and give them first-class Bitcoin tools, I think will pay massive dividends to those Square merchants long-term.
Agreed. Shout out to everybody at Cash App, Square, Jack, Miles, Owen. I'm trying to think of the other names in my mind right now. They're escaping me, but I know it's been a massive effort by everybody over there pushing Bitcoin forward. Great to see. With that, we have a couple of 21,000.
So you missed about 10,000 people, but it was close.
Yeah. Soap Miners app does 21,000 sats. Soap Miner will always accept sats no matter what. Bitcoin is money. Use it as such. Number go up doesn't matter. Freedom go up matters. Royster, 21,212 sats, palindromes, zap. Guys, I'm feeling bullish. I am too, Royster. I am too, believe it or not. I feel most bullish when everybody is scared. FL Justin zapped. 103,301 sats, palindrome, zap. Cheers to you, fellas. Marty, appreciate you taking a look at my DM on LinkedIn. Sorry to make you go to that hellscape. 3 weeks viewing live show and not worrying about curse words in the car with kiddos, thanks to Primal. Nosterdads, hashtag Nosterdads, are going to help us win. Yes, we are. Shout out to you, Justin. That's it for the zaps right now.
While we're speaking to the audience, I want Queen to know that I can speak whenever I want.
Hey, no, you can't. Shut up. Don't interject again.
I support you, Logan.
I'm kidding. You can speak whenever you want. If it's valuable, next up on the list, we mentioned it, but record strike day, from a volumes perspective, didn't throw out any hard numbers, but all systems are running smoothly.
They're big numbers.
I like big numbers.
Very big numbers.
The biggest numbers. This was big news earlier this week. Tether has committed $100 million for Rumble advertising.
So on the surface, this doesn't seem like really notable Bitcoin news. But as the freaks know, Tether bought, effectively half of Rumble for, I believe, $750 million earlier in the year. And since then, Rumble's entire roadmap seems to be turning into basically like Paolo's dream public operating business. And so, do you see this this roadmap that
Logan, can you click into it?
The founder of Rumble came out with? It's like literally just like if Paolo was building a company from scratch. It's like Bitcoin wallet, AI, encrypted email, web browser. So, I think And then obviously, you know, Tether's kind of paying themselves here with this $100 million ad budget. But I assume a lot of that will be Bitcoin focused as well to Rumble users.
Like Tether's doing $100 million ad spend to pump Tether and their services, or is it just?
Yes. Okay. On Rumble, right? So it's like, you know, when you're watching Rumble and you get one of the like the horrible ads on Rumble, now one of the horrible ads will be like Tether focused. And probably a lot of them will be at that level of spend. But at the same time, they're releasing the Rumble wallet, which is going to be Tether and Bitcoin enabled. So I just think this is something to highlight. Clearly, they have massive ambitions here. Obviously, Tether has a massive war chest. Rumble has a significant user base. And it should be interesting to watch them build this out. I thought it needed to be highlighted.
I feel comfortable saying this, but I actually, some of you may know, I was in DC recording with Connor Brown a few weeks ago in the Rumble studios. And it's funny, after we recorded, there was a Rumble employee there who was our producer that day. And he was asking us questions about Bitcoin. He's like, it's a good time to buy. We're like, yeah, Samble Stack Sats. And he's like, I'm just waiting for the Rumble wallet to launch. And it's like, so I think internally they're really driving this too. I feel like that was a sort of anecdotal data point to me that it's not smoke and mirrors. They're actually moving towards this internally at Rumble.
I mean, Chris is clearly bought in. And I mean, Rumble put Bitcoin on their balance sheet as well. So we'll see how it plays out. But I don't know, like you can go back and listen to Rabbit Hole Recap when MicroStrategy first launched, Saylor first launched his Bitcoin strategy. Nobody had any idea who he was. You can look back when Cash App first started dabbling in Bitcoin. And I feel like this is also could be one of those moments, like the quiet before Rumble starts, you know, just going hard on Bitcoin and related things, right? It should be interesting. Obviously, it's centralized, comes with all the issues of centralization, but that roadmap is kind of fascinating. I mean, when you think Rumble, right, what do you think? You think a YouTube competitor. But yeah, if you look at that roadmap, it's literally like
AI data centers.
It's what Palo and Tether have been investing in, right? It's like AI, encryption, P2P communication, wallet infrastructure. So we'll see.
Very freedom tech forward, if you will.
Yeah.
Mav 21 zapped us 21,000 sats with no message. Thank you, Mav 21.
Ride or die. Sats speak louder than words.
They do. They really do. That's like, I love that. Sats speak louder than words. And there was a lot of words spoken on the internet and other places this week after over the weekend, President Trump, I believe, at Mar-a-Lago announced that he's going to make an FDR-like move, which I thought was pretty interesting that he would try to compare himself to FDR, as known as the enabler of the welfare state here in the United States by the century. And he's going to introduce a 50-year mortgage, or work to introduce a 50-year mortgage to United States citizens to help them get into housing. And a day later, it was reported by Unusual Whales that they're also working on 15-year car loans. And this seems to me like the president and his administration are completely disconnected from the zeitgeist and not really sort of attuned to what the core of the problem is, housing affordability.
It's lipstick on a pig.
It's worse than lipstick on a pig. It's like, I think that makes housing more affordable. Yes, your monthly payment may go down, but you're going to put way more money into that.
No. But I mean, that's not the goal. That might be what they say the goal is. But the goal is to actually do the opposite, is to prop up the housing market.
Mm-hmm.
Because it drives prices higher in a market where it's been very, you know, very shaky recently. You know, expenses are going up. People are having trouble. We've talked in the past, the 30-year mortgage as it is an American welfare program, right? Which, I mean, Trump so vividly reminded people by mentioning that FDR was the creator of it. But most countries, you can't get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. In a free market, banks would never give you a 30-year fixed rate mortgage in a highly inflationary environment. So it's a massively successful welfare program that also drives the prices of real estate up. And instead of fixing the core of the problem, you just push it out even more and just juice the welfare.
I mean, another important detail of this is he was presented this idea by the leader of the FHA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Bill Pult, whose family is very big in the real estate development world. And
yeah,
I think massively from this policy, if we're to...
That's what I'm saying. It's really like it's a bailout for the real estate market.
Yeah.
Portrayed as helping the average person. Now, that said, right, it does go, if you're not going to actually fix the core of the problem, this is one of the things we've talked about in the past, something that, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. I think there's a very strong argument that, let's forget the 50-year mortgage for a second. Like, if you don't take a 30-year fixed rate mortgage in an inflationary environment, then you're leaving sats on the table. Right. Like, they're giving you like the best debt terms ever priced in a shitcoin that's losing value over time. And the same is true for the 50 year. Right. So there's two pieces here. Right. One, it's proof of mandibles. But then the second one is, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad deal for people. I can't be the only one who like went to bed thinking like, oh, I can't wait to upgrade my 30 year mortgage to a 50 year mortgage. Like, why wouldn't you fucking do it? You're gonna make more purchasing power having that excess in Bitcoin than, you know, having the terms be shorter.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like, to your point, it's gonna drive prices higher.
100%. 100%.
While we may be able to stomach the carrying cost of a 50-year mortgage, I would gander to say that probably like 80% of the country probably isn't in the position to do that, particularly younger millennials and Zoomers and eventually Gen Alpha. And that's like, I mean, just this was him announcing this at Mar-a-Lago was the beginning of a 5-day stretch, which I would be very confident in saying was probably the worst 5-day stretch of either term that Trump has served, 2016, 2020, and beginning of this year to today. Absolute narrative collapse for the administration this week.
I mean, I would also take a 15-year car loan. I took a 4-year HVAC loan. 0% was fantastic. Because, you know, Wells Fargo just assumes you're going to miss a payment and then they raise it to 25% and it's super predatory. But if you actually make your payments, you're just like leaving money on the table. But, yeah, no, I look, if you have no assets and you have no savings, obviously centrally planned methods of trying to inflate the value of assets is a negative for you, is bad. Now the question is, and we've talked about this in the past, like the real question is like, I don't know how you unwind it. I don't think there's actually a good way to unwind it. And if you wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt, which I'm not sure I want to give them, you can imagine sitting in meetings for weeks trying to figure out how to ethically unwind it. And then just at the end, be like, fuck, we're not going to be able to, let's just give them 50-year mortgages. You can't, like, I don't know how you do without a widespread chaos, massive hurting. I mean, you want to talk about the people without assets? Yeah, it sucks. It sucks when government policy is just trying to inflate assets while your salaries are staying stagnant, but you crash asset prices, you crash markets, you launch us into an even worse depression than we're currently in. And I think those entry level wage earners, the lower income folk, it's going to be even harder for them. Like, they're going to lose their jobs, their wages are going to be a mess, even worse than it currently is. So I don't know what the solution is there. I think you kind of just have to walk through mandibles and then get out Bitcoin standard on the other side. Did you have room cleaning just stop by?
I thought I had a late checkout. I thought it was 2 p.m. Apparently it was noon. I'm on the West Coast. So 20 minutes past my late checkout, but they'll deal with it.
Did you tell them you're on air?
I did not. Did not. But
well, we have a hard stop in 40 anyway.
Well, I mean, this is a thread we've been pulling on for weeks now, and it ties back to what we talked about in the beginning of the episode, which is the government's not going to save you. You got to save yourself. Incorporating Bitcoin into your life, however that may be, staying humble, stacking sats, even if you're working paycheck to paycheck, just trying to shovel away 50 to 100 bucks a month. That'll go a long way over the course of a decade. If you're a small business,
all sats matter.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
If you're a business that is running a Square terminal, turn on the ability to convert a portion of your revenue into Bitcoin, hold it on your business balance sheet. I mean, I think for the housing market specifically, I think one thing you all know is I'm bullish on this intersection of Bitcoin as collateral for real estate. I don't think it's going to be a panacea quick fix, but I think over time, if you begin to introduce Bitcoin as collateral into these credit structures, it can begin to minimize the need to have the equity value of the house increase if Bitcoin's doing its thing over the course of 30 or now 50 years. Maybe you're more comfortable selling your house at a price that is not as high as many have come to expect. Maybe the growth rate of the equity value of the real estate doesn't increase at the pace that it has been over the last 30 years. That wanes, and Bitcoin does the heavy lifting for you in those credit structures, and you begin to level out housing cost. Obviously, another driver of housing affordability is the fact that we let tens of millions of illegal immigrants in the country, and they're sort of competing for the same scarce resources, and all of them or many of them are being subsidized by the government itself, or were to a certain extent. It's a complete shit show. Mandibles, I guess you could say. But we got to stay positive. Irrationally optimistic. We can save ourselves. Get the message out there.
No, I mean, thank God Bitcoin exists. Otherwise, there'd be zero optimism here. But I'm a very hopeful person because of Bitcoin. This next story I thought was fascinating and actually kind of a cool feature. You want to talk about fintech innovation? Robinhood now will deliver cash to your door.
This is just going to lead to like GoPuff drivers to steal people's money.
No. So the GoPuff CEO commented on this. They already deliver like Beats headphones and shit. So they're already delivering high value items. And the driver doesn't know what's in the bag, which I think is like a decent trade off. And they're not allowed to leave it on the door. They have to hand it to you.
Okay. All right. My first sort of reaction was, I feel like this is a great way to lose money.
So just for the freaks that are not aware, Robinhood is now allowing you to withdraw cash from your Robinhood account by having effectively a DoorDash driver bring you a bag of cash, which, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how useful it is. I'm sure there's going to be limits on it. But to me, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating feature add that I just never expected.
Yeah.
Did you see our buddy Joe Weisenthal's comment on it?
No.
He's like, you can now self-custody cash with Robinhood.
Yeah, we'll see. And like, so it's like you're trading stocks, you need to. I mean, so this is just going to lead to people using stocks as their savings account, right? Like you're not making any money in your savings account.
Well, to be fair, they already kind of are. That's probably the way to do it if you're not in Bitcoin. I mean, obviously Bitcoin is better, but you definitely don't want to keep it in just a savings account and make way under the inflation rate. So you end up, you know, gambling on SPX, but then what do? They have to go to an ATM to withdraw, right? So this just removes the ATM from the step. Yeah. And then if you think about it from Robinhood's point of view, it's like they could roll out a bunch of ATMs and maintain them, blah, 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 and do all that. Or they can partner with someone who's already got a delivery network around the country and just deliver cash that way.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Cash coming to you from the partnership between Robinhood and GoPuff. Cash making a return. You know what else is making a return? Vine, apparently. I didn't see this until you put the list out. Jack.
Yeah, so this is Jack's Noster Collective, and specifically it's Rabble. But their group of dev hackers and other stuff is what they go by. is relaunching Vine using a recovered Vine archive that I guess was publicly out there. So they actually have hundreds of thousands of old Vine videos that they're populating with it. And it's Noster enabled. And you can obviously post new videos as well as using the old archive. So they're using the old archive to seed it, but you can also post new videos. And they're taking a hard stand against AI created content. So they're going to try and flag things that are AI and block them. And it's supposed to only be real shit.
Yeah, yeah. Vine. It was so much fun back in the day.
Yeah, and then I think Twitter bought it and then like killed it, right?
And it just died on the Vine. That was the joke.
Yeah, and then TikTok came out and basically just innovated on Vine and became the most successful social network. well, I guess behind Meta, Facebook's still ahead of them, but TikTok went from rags to riches real quick. By the way, it's not out yet. It sounds like the release is imminent. I saw Rabble complaining about getting App Store approvals and having issues with it. So I assume by the time you listen to this, it'll already be in the App Stores. It's, as Marty says, called Divine. But in the next few days, it should be up.
Love it. Shout out to you, Rabble. Bring back Vine. Divine. Go check it out. We got to speed through here. I can hear the cleaning crew getting mad at me. Well, the
next one is we only have four things left in shout outs. The next one is Starlink offers now a cheaper plan. As a massive Starlink fanboy, I just wanted to quickly highlight that now you could get unlimited, low priority Starlink data for $40 a month, which I think is a fantastic deal. I think they're at 8 million users now. They over half the satellites in space are Starlink satellites.
That's crazy.
The growth of that business is insane. Obviously, there's massive centralization risk. They had their first outage ever a couple months ago. And instead of just like your block losing internet access, it was like people in Nigeria, people in the UK, people in Kansas all lost internet at the same time, which is probably not a good thing. But it's awesome. It's fucking awesome. I'm a very happy customer of Starlink. So I might give Elon a lot of shit, but him and his team deserve a lot of credit on that product.
I haven't used it yet. I need to mess around with it.
It's so funny. The mobile one, like I literally just, I don't even mount it or whatever. You just like put it on the dash of my truck and plug it into USB-C and you have high speed Wi-Fi wherever you go.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane.
I just got a picture of my oldest son in a dentist chair. It's pretty funny. The next thing on the list, Human Rights Foundation story of the week coming out of Thailand, where new anti-scam measures have been implemented. The Bank of Thailand announced new measures to enhance monitoring of payments, financial institutions, and money transfer services to combat online scams and financial fraud. Governor Vittai Ratanakorn said the central bank will step up due diligence, prioritize investigations into suspicious transactions, require immediate reporting of irregular activity from banks, currency exchanges, and gold traders. While the policy aims to disrupt transnational criminal networks engaged in online scams and human trafficking, experts fear such a development may lead to broader surveillance of digital transactions and payments, which could threaten the privacy of many Southeast Asian dissidents based in Thailand. For more stories like this, make sure you sign up for the Financial Freedom Report newsletter at financialfreedomreport.org. Yeah, it sounds like suspicious activity reports coming to a Thai bank near you.
Every week, HRF brings us more and more examples of why we need freedom money more than ever. And this week, there was like, it was hard picking which story because they were all highly, highly relevant.
Yeah.
Should we do shout outs? And then we have two software updates.
Yeah, let me pull up Fountain here.
Okay, while you're pulling up Fountain, I know you're pressed for time. I'll just do the software updates. Maple 2.0 has been released. It's the big feature add is something me and Marty have been testing behind the scenes for a few weeks now, which is live web search. Fucking awesome. It uses Brave web search. So now the biggest thing holding back Maple. So Maple is obviously, it's like Signal, ChatGPT and Signal had a baby. So private, secure, AI chatbot. But it was for new data, it had a lot of difficulty because it was whatever the last open source model was updated was the newest data you got. Now it has real-time web search, so you can look for sports scores, anything that's up to date, you know, population count, stuff like that. They really improved their model selector when you're choosing which open source model you want. It makes it much easier for new users. And now they have a proper anonymous accounts where you don't need to like go through the trouble of making a burner email. You can just easily just pay with Lightning and not have it tied to your identity. So if you haven't used it, definitely check it out. Try maple.ai. I use it on a daily basis now. I literally have the window open on my computer as we speak. It's fucking awesome. And then the other big update was White Noise v0.2.0. White Noise is the Nostr-enabled signal competitor. Doesn't require a phone number. We've talked about it in the past. I think it's, you know, an absolute massive project. I'm very excited about it. OpenSats helped seed its creation. But it's fully open source, open protocol, doesn't require a phone number, gives you signal level privacy guarantees. It's even more efficient when it comes to group chats than Signal is. It's still very early, but I will say this feels like the first real stable release. Messages are working, I'm testing it out, but still early days, but very optimistic here. It uses the Nostr network for what? It uses it for the White Noise team doesn't have to run servers. It just uses open Nostr relays. And then more importantly, it uses the social graph. So if you're already using a Nostr app, you can easily just message people that you're interacting with. So I think this is like DMs on steroids. And it could become one of the major adoption drivers for Nostr going forward, because I could see people, you know, using White Noise as their first Nostr app and then moving to other apps like Primal after that.
You love to see it. And it is very much in line with the top boost from last week's episode of RHR. RHR 382, Stake and Shake, is on a Bitcoin standard. From Nos Fabrica, 25,052 sats, palindrome boost. Join Nos Fabrica in the first ever hashtag Wodathon to develop the web of trust ecosystem for Nostr. Build open source libraries, relays, and applications. Integrate portable and personalized trust metrics into Nostr clients. A grand total pool of 50 million sats will be rewarded to the best projects. Sign up via Formster and tune into weekly hackathon calls broadcasted to zap.stream starting Thursday, November 20th. That is next Thursday at 4 p.m. UTC, running through April 2026. I love that initiative. That's great. That little boost. And second boost and last boost, over 21,000 sats from last week's episode from our girl, Sil Pringle Mac, 22,222 sats, twos across the board, palindrome boost. Bitcoin is the tool. It still needs muscle and brain power to move the needle for mass adoption. Block and Square know this. It's confirmed. We will be visiting Nashville and Texas in March of 2026. Bring it. Love, Sil and Tony. Love you guys. Hopefully we'll be seeing you in Nashville or Texas in March.
Love it. Thank you for your support, guys. Fucking awesome. And separately, I got a private message from a ride or die freak that just came in. RHR is still the best show in Bitcoin. Marty getting kicked out of his hotel room while mispronouncing names is peak.
Hey, you know what you're going to get here. You know where you're going to get here. We're going to get kicked out of our hotel rooms. I'm going to mispronounce some words every once in a while. We're going to give you a signal. We're going to be irrationally bullish on Bitcoin when everybody's afraid. Nothing has changed from a fundamentals perspective.
Love it. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love, freaks. Sticky!